It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Hey. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. Leadership coaches abound, as well as perspectives and points of view about what makes for a great leader. But today's guest has put together, I think, a unique perspective on this, which is whole person leadership. She brings together emotional, relational, and strategic intelligence, and she calls it the art of learned intelligence. Carolyn Giovanello is a leadership coach and consultant, founder of the Art of Learned Intelligence. Carolyn, thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio. Make me smarter with my learned intelligence. What's happening?
I'm going to do my very best, Josh, but I know that you already have a great insight into a lot of these things, so hopefully it'll be more for your audience. But let's see how we do.
Okay, fantastic. So Art of Learned Intelligence, Allie. Is that what, Allie or Ally?
You like to it's Allie, yeah.
Yeah, Allie. So A-L-I. So how did you, well, let's go first for this definition, this holistic or whole person approach. Talk to me about emotional, relational, strategic intelligence and pulling those three things together. How do you define it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think a backstory that's really important is I've been working in L&D and leadership development for 20 plus years. And a lot of times somebody will call in a leadership expert and say, hey, we need to work on strategy, or we need to work on communication, or we need to work on, you know, the self-confidence of this leader. And they have a very siloed focus on what a leader or a leadership team needs to do to improve. And after doing the process of working with people and teams and organizations for a really long time, I realized that when we only look at one or potentially two dimensions of a person's development, a team's development, we're really not going to get past the surface issue. And in order to make change, as any person will tell you that works in this field, we really want to get to the root of things. And so in order to do that, it became very clear to me that we were going to need to look at definitely more than one, definitely more than two, and potentially three or more different areas of a person's development in order to make sure that we were actively encouraging and empowering and activating different parts of them, but equally so that a leader was growing as a whole person. And so in the case of working with hundreds and hundreds of leaders, it became very clear that the emotional component, how well a person knows themselves, is critical. You literally can't do any work with that if a person doesn't know themselves and is open to knowing themselves. And then secondly, when they have the data about themselves, how can they use it to build strong relationships with other people? And a lot of times leaders are working with people that don't have the same opinions, that don't believe in the same things. So it's finding a way of creating commonality by knowing yourself and being able to read others that creates that level of collaboration and communication. And then when you have a group of people that are creatives and decisive in their thinking and really want to explore risk positive opportunities, you have that many people in a group that are going to be using their brain towards one initiative, towards one objective. Mm-hmm. I mean, the sky really is the limit. And I think what's really exciting is when you can motivate individuals to knowing their power, to activating that ability to use it as a connection point, and then to create multiple sets of eyes and ears and hearts and minds moving towards a direction, you're really going to see impact happen at a level that you wouldn't if you didn't activate and look at somebody from a lot of different perspectives, which in this case is intelligences. And that's how I like to think about it, because obviously, every leader wants to become more intelligent. So it speaks to the ego as well as I love the way it sounded.
So
this is what we've been working on. And we've been doing this now for a couple of years. I'm incidentally going to Gonzaga University for my PhD in leadership studies to write about this specifically, because there's a lot of interest in developing whole person leadership.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of buzzwords, nothing that I'm going to disagree with in everything that you're saying. Can you tell us share a story about how you kind of come up, go about this and that process that you take an organization or a leader through in order to get them to do all three things, because that's not easy. It's not easy to even get a leader to do one thing, as most people listening to this will attest to. And so it is, I think, important to hear what this actually looks like. What is this? You know, let's put some color on this.
Yeah, we're going to storytell for just a minute here. I think one of the components that we should just be aware of is pretty much every person has these tools within them.
Okay.
The job that we have is to highlight them, is to find them, to highlight them, and to give people ownership and accountability to use them as works best for them. So one of the best examples I have is when I first started in leadership, I was given a job at UC Berkeley, where I was to work with the senior leadership team in the hopes of helping them through some L&D tools and support when the university was $150 million in debt, which meant that each one of these senior leaders was supposed to lay off about 7% of their total work group across each quarter. The morale was terrible. There were no resources to share. My job was virtually impossible. So I came in really feeling so proud of myself that I got this senior level job. It was my first one in L&D at that level. I get to go into the room where all the people are making the decisions, and all I see them do is fight. And I had never really been in the room as the sausage was being made. And so this was really shocking to me that they just weren't working together easily and everything wasn't, you know, sunshine and roses. I honestly, it took me weeks to really get my head around the fact that they may present out to their teams and to the university as one way. But when they're in this room really having to duke out what it is to make their part of the organization successful, it became very cutthroat. It became very siloed.
Yeah.
So I understood very quickly, even though I probably couldn't have articulated it at the time, but that the only way I was going to make progress was not with the group as a whole, but with individuals. So I would almost pick a person each SLT meeting that I was going to focus all of my attention on. And in doing so, I not only wrote down the words that they said, the pain points that they had, I wrote how they carried themselves. I wrote what I thought were overarching emotions that they were trying to share or that were miscommunicated or what I thought they were trying to communicate with nonverbal skills. I took all that data and then I would arrange a time to meet with them. And I would say, these were my observations. Tell me what's really hurting you. Tell me what you really want. And I would speak to them on a level that they obviously knew right away I was paying attention. So we immediately got through the level of how do we talk about emotions when I named them for them? I could see that you wanted X. I could feel that you wanted tell. And so immediately we had that connection. So the EQ part just sort of opened up beautifully. Then once we have that dialogue going, I say, what do you want to do? Who can you partner with on the SLT? Who do you feel like? And so I start to pull from them these solutions and ideas that they have, but there's no room for them in those meetings to share because tension is so high. Mm-hmm. Once I start building that puzzle piece and really understanding what it is that they need, then I'm going to use that as a strategic point for me, which I'm going to hold, right? I'm not giving that away right away because I'm not sure what it's going to be used for, but I understand what they want, what they feel. I understand who they think they can get it from and with. And then I wait on that piece of, I'll call it strategy, until I can figure out how it fits in the overall puzzle. Mm. So I did this with each of the senior leaders. I probably hit out of the 12, 8 in the course of 6 weeks. So I felt very accomplished to say, I know this person. I know them intimately. I also know what it is that they want. I also know who they'd be willing to work with. I also know what could happen if we could part and parcel these groups with the resources that they had, which were minimal, but as something that could be combined together to make more forceful, to make more useful. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, there happened to be a meeting about 8-9 weeks into, you know, my first time there, you know, within the first quarter. And I had yet to speak at an SLT meeting. I just sat in the back. You know, I have it right now with my notepad and I listened and I observed. And at one point they all stopped talking. And I assure you, this was like a miracle. This had never happened. And so me, you know, not thinking before doing, my mouth literally dropped open and I just started to expel all the puzzle pieces. I immediately started, if I may, it seems like, and I just started pulling. I said, you know, over here in IT, what they've been talking about, their real pain points and where they feel like, and if I could combine that over here with HR, which I know is really working on, and this is going to really help product over here. And I started to bring all of these different people and all of these different ideas into something that would coexist with each other. Now, when no one stopped me, I got up, went to the whiteboard, and literally started to draw this out as a means of, again, I work in L&D. If you can't learn it from the way I'm saying it to you, then can I draw a picture and try to get you with me? So I want to see people having the aha. You know, I'm really vibing on my own ego here going, I think I'm onto something. So I do my spiel. It's not 10 minutes. You know, I feel really accomplished. And my manager who was sitting in that meeting, he looked around the room and then he said to me, thank you so much, Carlin. And I, of course, was like, you're very welcome. And he said, you know, you can leave. And I can tell you that I knew that I was fired.
That was not the response I was looking for.
Exactly. You know, and I just, you know, if you have like a little balloon, like a kid with a little balloon, my balloon just popped and kind of sad faced, walked back to my cubicle as one does. And later in the afternoon, he came back to that cubicle and sat next to me, kind of stared at me for a minute. And then he said to me, Carlin, what do you know about coaching? And I knew that this was going to be one of those pivotal moments in my career. So I thought about the answer. And when I turned to him and I said, you know, I'm a very physical person, but I don't think I could teach somebody to do a sport. It's just not really my thing. He obviously laughed in my face because that's not what he was talking about. But when he finished laughing at me, his rationale for asking the question was, a coach is the type of person who can really pull out from people pieces of data that aren't normally easily accessible. And they do it in an intuitive way because they're listening for those things. They do it without making a person feel defensive. They do it with the aspect of progress being the number one goal. And that's really shared between a coach and a client. He said, and I just watched you do that with the group of people that you obviously have relationship with, that you obviously are intimately aligned with in an emotional way. And because of that, they've approved your strategy. And so we're going to go forward with this over the next 12 weeks, and you're going to be the person that's leading this. And I, to this day, I mean, I've told that story many, many times. That was one of the most pivotal moments ever, starting the Art of Learned Intelligence, which I didn't think about it at the time. But knowing all of those key factors is what got this department in a matter of 2 quarters into a place where they were actually making progress, where they were actually turning heads at the university as a whole and saying, look, we can do with less and still make, efficient steps forward, where the university was really staggering around that. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, was the first moment where I really saw that if you can use different types of strategy and tools and connection points and belief systems and values to connect with leaders, what's going to happen is that you're going to be able to move the needle faster. It just takes a little bit of time on the front end. And so over the course of however many years since that has been, I've been creating this sort of in the back of my mind, which really evolved in the last 2 years when I needed to find a way to modernize leadership development. Basically, we take too long to try and get people to come to these realizations because we're being delicate and we're being kind and we're not wanting to push. And yet a leader lives in those places. That is what their job is to do, is to push the envelope, is to think outside the box. And so my job is to do that with their benefit of growth in mind. And so I pushed myself to come up with something that I thought would be helpful, that would shift the needle. And, you know, I know we talk a lot about culture on your podcast. I think to shift the culture of an entire organization, to see how people can grow in multiple areas, and when they do, what comes from that?
What I'm, you know, from your story and applying it more broadly, I know that my work has not been in the past. Some of my work has not been as successful because we did not have that type of engaged revelation about who's in the room and what they really care about.
Yeah.
I came up with some great plans and we brought everybody together, but ultimately it was about how they were going to behave. And no matter, it's almost like no matter where you go, there you are. If you're unhappy here, you're going to be unhappy there. If you are unself-aware before I help you with your, you know, new culture strategy and platform, you're not going to be aware of yourself after that. And that was a big, that was also a big learning. So it's interesting to hear your, how you see the world, how you see these people, and how your approach, I think, is refreshingly honest in a way that allows you to make some serious progress. If you're brought in to help in a specific area, because no one, I can't imagine, I think the goal is for people to, or for an organization to say, hey, can you come in and teach us the art of learned intelligence? But my guess is you're not quite at that brand awareness yet. So if mostly when you are brought in, I assume you're brought in for a specific, like you introduced your construct by saying, hey, this leader needs help with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that's typically how you're brought in. And if it is, how are you able to not only get their permission to do that thing, which in and of itself is tough, but then get permission to go into the other areas, the emotional, relational, strategic?
Permission is an interesting word to use, and I like it. I will say the same thing for working with individual clients that want one-on-one coaching is the same thing that I will use when I enter into an organization I'm asked to work with, a singular leader or a team of leaders. Once you get permission, I think the lid comes off and that level of psychological safety and trust is there that they will go anywhere that you tell them, they will feel better. They will get relief. They will get the yes that they need. Leaders are human beings too. And we often forget that they have the same doubts, they have the same worries, they have the same concerns about success and their people and their legacy. And when you are given permission to step into their bubble, then really you can talk to them about anything. They will almost believe anything if they believe in you, believing in what they need to achieve. And so I actually don't have a struggle once I'm hired. I think the challenge is to get the job, you know, as any person that, you know, works as a client facing entrepreneur, you're always hoping to get that client. And I think you mentioned it. I'm very honest. I will tell people exactly what I see, exactly what I feel, because that's what they're paying me for. They're paying me for these intuitive hits, this ability to read between the lines. And so when I do, and you strike a nerve. And again, it's not the easiest thing to do with senior level leaders because they have learned how to present themselves.
That's right. They're expert. They're expert at that.
They know their spiel. They know their stories. They know the vocabulary. They know their persona. They know what hats to wear. They know what jackets to wear. You know, they know how to present themselves. So when you can come in and I think do two things. One, you get to hear what they're saying in between their stories. You get to really sense what they're trying to communicate when that's not the first piece that they're sharing. And two, when you get to be the person that says, no, I don't believe that. No, you didn't sell me on that. No, that's not the story that I'm going to buy from you. As soon as you become the no man, which every person is always like, you know, you want to be the yes person. That's teamwork. Teamwork is the yes person. I actually think teamwork is the no person. It's the person that says, can I ask another question? Mm-hmm. I'm curious about, because I think there's so many things that we do on autopilot and there's nothing right or wrong about it. It's just, we have a lot of work to do. It almost seems like we are asked to work harder and faster with less resources. AI is constantly threatening in some capacity, either our jobs or our ability to produce at the level that we need to. And so a lot of clients that I work with right now feel pressure. And in that pressure, there is the desire to rush, to force something. And you'll notice that becomes a cultural shift in a company when everybody is just looking for output, output, output. We forgot about
100%.
Right?
Let's just breathe into that moment for a second, because
right there.
This is the majority of organizations. Yep. Every single person listening to this knows that that's exactly the kind of culture that has been fostered and pushed forward. Okay. I just wanted to at least go, all right. Yes. All right. Please continue.
And I know that every person that just acknowledged that that's their situation is now going, but what do we do
instead? Of course. What do you do? It's got to get delivered.
Yeah, I don't want it to feel that way. And I think one of the first things that I like to talk about with senior leaders is the fact that if they choose accountability and vulnerability as their first two acts of service, if you will, for their organization, you will actively feel your staff, your employees, your teams exhale. Mm-hmm. Because suddenly there are two things that are very real that are on the table. And that is for a leader to be able to say, I don't have the answers yet. I got to figure that out. Or we made a mistake. We're going to figure it out. Or we're not sure what to do. This is all new for us as well. You know, again, this belief system that because you're in a senior level leader role, that you have to have the answers to things that are so new, people are literally creating them day by day. So how are we supposed to keep up with that level of information that's coming out? If we pretend to know everything, to have all the answers without demonstrating the level of vulnerability and work that goes into trying to understand, trying to grapple with, trying to get the right information, trying to be strategic, making mistakes, apologizing, moving forward, all of these things that are human level characteristics, that brings that level of vulnerability where other people in the organization go, okay, then it is okay for me to risk in the effort to do something that no one else has been able to do to help us move the needle.
Yeah.
And again, there is this collective sigh of both fear and relief that can happen when leaders choose to embody or not different qualities and characteristics that demonstrate that they're human beings. And so that's that EQ at play, but silence is a cultural sign. So if nobody in the company is talking, if no one in the company is interjecting, if everyone in the company is like, if I just stay quiet and believe we'll be okay, it's not going to work. It's 2026. Yeah. It's not working. So we want to make sure that, you know, a company's culture feels like we embrace these human capabilities and competencies as a means of moving the business forward.
I just realized something, and tell me what you think. We're using old models of leadership to in a new, a completely new paradigm where previously our vision for our imagination of our expectation of a leader was knowing, confidence, like that's how you're like, follow me. But you're right in that, and I've been thinking and writing about this too, about AI. There's just like no way, you just can't keep up as a human. There's so many things. Mm-hmm. And you're like, did you know about this? Did you know about this? And you're like, yes, of course, I've thought about all the options. But it's like there's no way. And very quickly, your employees, your staff, your ELT, your SLT, they are all going to go, at some point, like, that's not true. And as a matter of fact, there's no way that could be true.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact, it's not, it's actually a liability if you say that that's true. And so I think what we're uncovering here is that we're at a moment where what there have always been, I think, intuitive leaders. There have always been leaders that have led from accountability and honesty and vulnerability. But it feels more than ever that we're in a moment where if you are not, you're not a leader. You're not going to succeed. What do you think?
I mean, just hearing you say that, I have to take pause because it's a really emotional time to be in the world. It's a really emotional time to be in the United States of America.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, as you mentioned, you know, certain leaders, and I just want to say, you know, when I listen to people like Jasmine Crockett or I listen to AOC, you know, people that use emotion as the platform to be strategic, to connect with thousands, if not millions of people across the entire United States, to distill a message that is so critical for people to not only hear, but to understand as it relates to them. This is becoming a life or death skill. And I don't want to make it too dramatic, but I could, because I love drama. Yeah. But I do think it's absolutely imperative that leaders understand the magnitude of their position and that they have to lean on things like emotion, which connects them to other people. That, again, that's the group of folks that's going to move the needle. And in this case, is it to change who is in office? Is it to change what we know about policy? But if we're not taking this seriously at any level of leadership, we're not taking it seriously enough. And I think that this is just a moment in time where being able to study leaders and leadership in the future is going to be incredibly fascinating. I'm a historian by nature, and I studied war studies for my master's degree. So there's a lot of interest that I have in just understanding leadership quality and capability at the moment that it is needed. And so I think there've been a couple of things that we've surfaced in this talk already that feel imperative for the moment that we're in time. And if you can't adjust, if you can't recalibrate to understand how to be a leader with this environment in mind, you are not a leader. And that's okay. Sometimes people have to step up to step down, right? It's not your time. It's not your space. But there are people that are doing this exceptionally. And I just want to call attention to those folks.
You were talking, you said no. Teamwork is the no person. And I actually think that is the statement that you're understating it. I think by calling bullshit, you have the power to acknowledge or bring to light that that isn't what is going to work here.
Right.
That you are, there's, whether it's stuck in or, you know, bringing along old, you know, habits or whatever it might be, that I think is probably why you're seeing so much success in your own business, is because because we need people like you to slap us across the face and say, this isn't the right way to go about it. Because it just doesn't match. And maybe, historian, we could do a little, you know, market analysis. What kind of leaders do we see out there? And what companies are succeeding because they're the leader that they are versus, you know, is there some sort of strong correlation between emotionally intuitive, vulnerable, accountable leadership and those that are, you know, willing to just, you know, say my way or the highway?
I mean, I think 100%. I don't think people pay money to go hear a leader who is generic. You know, you look at, I think, the most dynamic of folks, and they are the people that have a very unique perspective. There was a course that we used to teach at Block when I was the head of leadership development over there, called the Integral Lead Program. And it was a 2-day intensive, which, you know, it's hard to get leaders in a room for, you know, an hour, let alone 2 straight days. And we managed to do it. And one of the things that we talked about was a leader being evergreen. And what that meant during that time was, it doesn't matter what your platform is, as long as you have your platform, you have your unique perspective that you will be willing to share to any person at any time. And it will fit in some situation, not every situation, but it will fit in some situation. And it is far better that we are cultivating at this organization people that have a distinct approach and opinion than are we going to spend time making sure that everyone knows the same framework, that they say in the same way, that they can use with the same teams, that they can hopefully get the same agenda, because that's not what is working. And so really creating authenticity, even though that word is used so much these days, good. Let's be authentic. Let's be the person that isn't the most liked in the room. Let's be the person that isn't going to say everything is, you know, sunshine and roses, because it's not. But again, those are also the people that say, have we thought about this? And someone goes, God, we haven't. Thank you. you know, if we didn't come up with this thing, we would have had this loophole. We would have had this challenge. Mm. And I do two things. You know, you said bullshit. I call shenanigans. And I'll actually say in a meeting, I'm sorry, I got to call shenanigans, or this is my move. Anyone that's ever been with me in a thing, they'll see me do this, whether on a virtual call or in a real meeting. And this is my hard timeout.
Timeout. Which is, yeah, the timeout. Yeah,
something's
sign.
Not working here. Right? Like, if you can read the energy in a room, you can hear when something is boilerplate, is template, is just absolutely ridiculous and isn't going to fit the situation. And everyone goes, here we go again. You just watch them all click out. Here we go again. Instead, I'm the person who goes, hey, sorry, time out. I got to call shenanigans. What are we talking about? Why is this important? How does this relate? And I'm not doing it to be against the process. I'm doing it to say, this is not taking us where we need to go. And I want to be the person that says, let's redirect. It happens. We go on autopilot, but let's redirect. Let's come back to the thing that we need to be focused on. Because again, I want to work with and for companies where their culture is saying, risk take, ask questions, be curious. You know, when you're a coach, the very first thing they talk about in coach training is, what is your level of curiosity? Can you be so curious about another person's origin story, about their tale that they're giving you, about their path that they want to go on, about the route that they have taken already to get here? Just be curious. If you can have that as a distilling feature of your leadership, what you're really doing is you're making sure that there are no gaps, that there are no holes, that there is nothing that hasn't been explored. And a lot of times the stuff that we skip over is the hard stuff. Yeah. And if you become a company that skips over the hard stuff, you're going to find that that's the one where their CEOs are being asked to leave by the board, where they have exodus of people that leave on their own, where they have to lay off hundreds, if not thousands of people because of mismanagement in leadership. And that's happening. I mean, what was Amazon last week? 30,000 people?
Yeah.
That's an extreme situation where you can't say, oh, it was a hitch in the giddy up with some tech maneuver. No, that was an issue with leadership.
Mm. Yeah. And more we I feel like we are all calling bullshit. You're like, we're getting used to it. We're with, you know, government or with, you know, the tech leaders, and they go, oh, it's just we just overhired in the pandemic. Now we need to course correct and we need to right size. And everybody's going, what's the real story?
Exactly.
And so you're able to see and then speak the truth. As we there's obviously a lot to the work that you're doing. We don't have all the time in the world, as much as I'd love to stay on and talk with you. I want to start to land the plane, and I want to ask what those inside of organizations can do to start to bring a little more of the era's appropriate leadership style. Now, I would be very flattered if we have a chief executive or two listening to this, but most folks that are listening are leaders at some point, at somewhere within the organization. What would you advise them? What is the first thing that they need to do if they want to think about whole person, they want to think about challenging the status, you know, what is, you know, shenanigans, or I don't know, where would we start? There's so many interesting angles, and I just don't know where to begin.
Sure. I want to just touch on something that you mentioned, which is my hope for any person that's in a leadership position, no matter what level that leadership position is in. And again, going back to whole person leadership, you better be learning every day, all day, because that really is what your job requires. So I hope that there are countless CEOs listening to your podcast. I hope that there are senior level and junior level and ICs, people just going into their careers. Everyone needs to learn in order to improve. And if you give up that quality, if you say, I'm at a level where I don't need to be following anything, you're done. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I would love for leaders who are building experiences where they don't just talk about culture. What they're doing is they are practicing changing it in real time. And what that looks like is being in the room, making those mistakes, having those conversations, giving feedback in real time. I can't tell you how many companies hire me about feedback because people aren't exchanging information. That's wild to me. I love talking about it. You should be giving feedback in every conversation, yeah, and you should be asking for feedback in every conversation. You have to be designing alliances where you tell people, if you want this to be successful, this relationship between you and me, this project, this initiative, here are the things that are going to make it successful. Here are the things that are going to cause it to fail. Let's be explicit. Let's put it on the table at the first meeting, not the 17th meeting when we suddenly go, oh, it doesn't look like we're going to make it. I wonder what happened. No, we've already discussed those pieces, right? We talk about the vulnerabilities in our executive team. Everybody knows, everybody talks about it already. If we had water coolers anymore, we would be talking at the water cooler.
Everybody knows anyway. That's exactly that, so is the, that is probably the title of this episode. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So we want the language to become so comfortable that people are talking about, well, what are your values against X? Right? What is your saboteur saying that we can't do here? How do we name our ability to, you know, look past the goal to something even further? What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? What are our opportunities? What are our threats? What is the goal that we're actually trying to achieve here? Do we have the resources? Do we care enough about this? I think the other piece that's really interesting is sometimes we're setting goals and we keep to them because we think if we do, right, if we have this North Star and it doesn't change, that we're successful. But again, we talked about how fast business is moving and evolving and changing, not only just business, but the economy, politics, everything that's happening, especially in the United States right now, but I think across the world. You have to be able to evolve and pivot. That is a leadership skill per excellence, is to be able to say, what we came up with is not right. We're going to pivot to make sure that it is. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that I'm failing. It doesn't mean that I'm a bad leader, right? Like that's... Exactly. Yeah, you got to be okay with that. It's like I said, I think we're redefining what it means to be a good leader.
And that's exciting. And I'm glad to be working in this field right now.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thank you for sharing just a sliver of your incredible wealth of knowledge. Carolyn Giovanello is a leadership coach and consultant, the founder of The Art of Learned Intelligence. Learn more about her at her website, theartoflearnedintelligence.com. Carolyn, amazing. Thank you for opening our eyes just a little bit more. And I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me, Josh. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays, and you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.